Hello and welcome into this edition of the Gulch Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. For those following along on YouTube, this is what the inside of an NBC Sports dressing room looks like. Well, Rex, you appear to be in the media tent for the CJ Cup Byron Nelson. Let's start there. What's new from the golf course today?
New from the golf course today, had a chance to talk to Jordan Spieth and Jason Day. I thought both of those two were interesting because they're paired tomorrow. They go off at 7:45 a.m. for the first round, and there's a dichotomy between those two. One of those players has played this event 11 times, trying to win his hometown event for the first time. The other one, his name is Jason Day. He's won this twice. He's got five top 10 finishes. He seems to sort of own this event. It doesn't matter which of the golf courses it's been played at over the last few years, which is fun. And I wanted to carve out, I know you're on a bit of a time crunch because you've got to catch a car to LaGuardia, I can only guess. Is that what you're flying
That's
in
correct.
And out of? But I know I had a lot to offer when it came to Jordo, because I know you have a soft spot for him. So I'm going to go ahead and lean in to the Jason Day side of this. And I went back to last year and the emotions that he had winning for the first time in 5 years. And you guys played the sound on golf today. You kind of heard it in his voice. He's still almost emotional about it because you go from where he was winning major championships, number one in the world, being that guy that's on top that does everything really well, to, I don't want to say he had fallen off the planet, but I made a point of like reading over everything that he said last year when he was here at TPC Craig Ranch. And there was a time, I found this answer fascinating, that he was just trying to figure out, he was clicking off the clock, essentially. Okay, I have to play 15 events a year for the next X number of years to get fully vested in my retirement or whatever the case may be. If I can somehow struggle through this many start, like, it's amazing to hear a player of that caliber break it down in the simplest of terms of, I'm just going to mail this in until I can get the biggest possible paycheck I can, to go from that. And look, I was talking with our boy Aaron O today about this. Chris Como has caught a lot of strays in his career, certainly going back to his Tiger Woods days. And he's kind of taken a lot of blame for a lot of things when it comes to other players. In the case of Jason Day, I would say that's his Mona Lisa. Not because he's created someone that can win on the tour again, because Jason Day had the talent to do it long before he started working with Chris Como. Because he took someone who was so broken and on the verge of, this goes back to Brooks Koepka joining LIV Golf because he thought he was washed at 30-whatever years old. He took someone who was so broken and found a way to turn them around and not necessarily give them a chance to win again, but to give them the belief that they can do it and do it pain-free. That, to me, is an amazing story.
I always thought that Chris Como was sort of unfairly painted. He's a super smart guy, and I don't think anything was going to help Tiger Woods when Chris Como started working with Tiger Woods. Like, his body was just so broken. You have a stubborn athlete who has been down that reinvention road before. But Chris Como now is actually one of like the hottest instructors on the PGA Tour. You know, he brought Jason Day back from the dead. He worked with Bryson DeChambeau when Bryson DeChambeau was winning a major championship. He now works with Xander Schauffele, who Xander Schauffele worked with his dad forever, and now he's moved to Chris Como, just to name a couple of his clients. And you're right, he's done miracle work as it relates to Jason Day. And you can get into his current game and how he's not, you know, all that happy with how he's played over the past couple months, that he's kind of, you know, battling a two-way miss with the irons. But I think when you look big picture, as you just did, zooming out 30,000 feet, if you're looking optimistically at this, the fact that Jason Day can even put in the work now that he has with Chris Como over the past 6 months to grind like he was doing back in his prime in 2014, 2015, at 2016, it wasn't even feasible for him to do so just with his body a couple of years ago. He's taken good enough care now, Jason Day has, of his body, and it still takes a ton of work. It's still 2 or 3 hours of treatment each and every day, going in the cold plunge, going in the sauna, going and visiting his trainer. But the fact that he actually can put the work in now, I think is a testament to him. It's a testament to his work ethic. It's a testament to the team that he's built around him. And then now at age 36, it's not him kind of counting down the days until his retirement fully vests. I still believe he can have a couple of quality years ahead of him, which when he was outside the top 150 in the world ranking, it certainly looked like he was dust.
It did. And it, again, really, really cool story for all the reasons you just pointed out. And the dichotomy on the other side of the tee tomorrow morning will be Jordan Spieth, who you just ran that sound on golf today. And he sort of volunteered some stuff at the end of the interview I had with him about his wrist. And we've spent a lot of time since last year's PGA Championship sort of touching on the idea of this left wrist injury and how he's dealing with it. It was on camera. He told me some things, and I'm sure your eyes probably lit up when you heard him talking about it. Off camera, I was even more surprised that as he sort of walked over to the podium to do his regular press conference, he talked about the idea that he pops it out was the word he uses. And he goes, and I have to get someone to pop it back into place. But his doctors and his team around him is telling them that it's not really something that can be fixed with surgery. So it's not as though you're hurting it.
Everything
more.
Can be fixed with surgery.
I don't know if you're qualified to say that. I'm going to go ahead and ask you for your medical degree before we push on with that conversation. But I mean, I don't think Jordan Spieth would leave this to chance. You and I would, or certainly I would. I mean, my wife gets on me all the time about, I think you need to have someone look at that thing above your right eye. And my dismissive is, it's fine. No, it's not fine.
Like, it's cancer.
Yeah, that's right. I had to get it taken care of. We don't joke about it anymore. No, in this particular case, I'm sure he has gone to everyone he can possibly find. But the way he explained it to me, he said at TPC on Monday, it popped out, quote unquote, popped out. And he goes, it takes a day or two for it to stop hurting. Inflammation, I can only assume. I don't know what it is. And he goes, subsequently, I missed the cut because I got behind and started having to play catch up. And he goes, and then I missed the cut at Valspar. And it was a really, really Jordan moment when he says that, because you would appreciate this. He looked at me and he goes, I don't miss the cut at Valspar. It wasn't a brag. It was a fact. I mean, that golf course was built for him.
He doesn't miss the cut at the Masters either. And he did.
Yeah. And I think this speaks to the idea that he's in a weird area where we can talk about Jason Day's medical issues. And there were a lot of things going on there that he could get dealt with and some things that he needed Chris Como to fix. We talked yesterday on the show about Will Zalatoris. And I want to touch on that as well, because I think there are some alarm bells there about him withdrawing. I know it just makes sense for him to withdraw from this event. But certainly when you have someone who has his medical history, when he did it, sort of, I raise my eyebrows about it. But when you have a caliber of player of Jordan Spieth who tells you with a shrug, it just popped out. What do you mean it just popped out and there's nothing they can do? That makes no sense to me.
Wasn't that the Tiger line at the Masters long ago where he said he just popped it back into place?
I think that was like a shoulder thing. Now don't.
No, it was like a bone in his hand. Like, so you mentioned Aaron Oberholzer a little while ago, who will obviously be on the broadcast for Golf Channel from the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson. He would know firsthand, literally, how serious wrist and hand issues can be and how detrimental they can be to your PGA Tour career. Jordan Spieth has now been dealing with this for more than a year. Like he missed this tournament a year ago because of this wrist issue. And he's exactly right in kind of looking at the issue, where he can play 3 weeks and be pain free. And then he said, like, he can, you know, reach on the counter and push forward, and all of a sudden that's what's kind of sets it off, and it's a day or two recovery, and he can't hit golf balls, and he's just kind of toast that way. I'm sure, again, not a medical professional, I'm sure that there is a surgical procedure that could limit this issue. But again, anytime you're dealing with hands, wrists, it's a huge problem for golfers. I'm sure it's a 6 to 9 month recovery that he's probably not going to want to undertake, particularly now.
Just stop. Major championships. You and your make-believe medical license. Not only are you coming up with diagnoses.
There's a fix for everything.
But now you're coming up with, okay, it's going to take 6 months. Just stop.
It is.
Just pulling stuff out of the air. You have no idea.
Otherwise, you would do it.
No, apparently there's nothing that he can get done, because I'm sure at this point
there's nothing that can be done. That's impossible.
As you pointed out, it's been over a year now, and the results have spoken for themselves. He is what his record says he is right now. So if he was looking in the mirror in his heart of hearts and went, I've got to get this fixed. Like, I can't continue to compete against the best players in the world on an ailing wrist. That's just not going to work. I don't believe for a minute that the doctor went, okay, we can fix it, but it's a 6 to 9 month recovery. Nope. That's no good. At this stage in his career, that sounds like the absolute best idea. So I'm not buying that at all. You can take your make-believe medical license and go out the door.
Let's say there's no fix, that in the year 2024, there is no way that he can be fixed medically. And so if this is what Jordan Spieth is going to have to deal with for the remainder of his career, it's worth discussing where Jordan Spieth is at the moment. I mean, since 2017, and he won the Open Championship, he has just two victories, Rex. Like, I love Jordan Spieth as much, if not more,
love.
than than other golf fans. I love watching him play. I love covering him. I think he's an absolute boon to the PGA Tour. But his record is what it says it is. And there can be a case made that he is now not a top five player in the world, not a top 10 player in the world. He's an above average 20th. PGA Tour player. He's an 20th. Above average PGA Tour player at this point. And his world ranking is based basically on a couple of high finishes that are probably going to be removed from his divisor here.
And no one was more surprised than me when I was doing a report and I was trying to figure out how many, if any, top 20 players in the world are in the field this week. There's just one. It's Jordan right at 20. And I was kind of as surprised as you are. I'm going to do the old-timey radio sports thing right now and say your level of concern is higher for Jordan or your boy Willie Z?
Oh, much higher for Jordan.
Oh.
Yeah, much higher for Jordan, because when you look at Jordan Spieth's skill set, like what is he currently excel at? When you think back to 2015, he made an insane amount of 20 to 25 footers. Like you look at his stats, he was filling it up 25 to 30% of his attempts. He was making that. In 2017, he was the second best ball striker on the planet. Now what you look at Jordan Spieth's skill set, he's not particularly long. He's not particularly straight. His approach play is now outside the top 100 on the PGA Tour. He is still making his fair share of birdies and still hitting quality shots throughout the round, but he's not sharp enough through the bag, and he's making just so many mistakes. How can a player be sixth in birdie average and yet 60th on the PGA Tour in scoring average? And I would say, Rex, all the players who have come along over the past decade, I think they all forced the competition to do something. When Roy burst on the scene and he won those four major championships in quick succession, like everyone thought like his explosiveness was really something to behold. When Bryson bursts on the scene and he does what he does in 2020, I think everyone starts to speed chase a little bit. Scotty is different in that his efficiency, his tidiness, the standard that he sets is so high that I think it's going to force his competition to react. Like, you know what Scotty Scheffler's range of outcomes are going to be. If he plays well, he shoots 65. If he plays poorly, he's probably going to shoot 71 or 72. That puts so much pressure on everyone else to play close to perfect golf, and I think it really heightens the differences between Scotty, who's at the top of the game, and players like Jordan, who have fallen off and now have a wider gap that they need to somehow close.
It was funny. I was listening to someone, and I can't think of the show if it is right now, sort of breaking down Jokic, his style of play in the NBA. And they referenced and they called it clumsy brilliance. And I thought to myself, that's a good way to describe Jordan Spieth, because it is clumsy brilliance. Like, when you watch him play, I mean, you have to be entertained. If you're not entertained, you don't like golf. Yeah. However, it's not perfect. You're right. When Scotty is out there playing golf, there's nothing clumsy about it. When he's in full flight, it's just brilliance. But when Jordan is out there doing what he does best and stumbling along and yelling at Greller, and they're barking at each other, and he's trying to find somewhere to drop where he can get up and down from 190 yards, it's clumsy brilliance. And you're right. That hasn't been there on a consistent basis like it was when he was playing his best golf. My guess is, to your point, I don't want to double down on the idea that you're a fake medical doctor here, but you're right. I mean, if there is no fix for this other than maybe just not playing for X amount of time. I'm not even going to throw a number on it like you. He seems really comfortable.
6 to 9 months.
6 to 9 months he just throws out without even checking Wikipedia. WebMD. He's just going to throw it out there. No, I think what you're going to end up with, and I tend to agree with you. I think I said it yesterday when I was talking with you and Damon on Golf Today. Like, yes, Will Zalatoris withdrawing from this event, of course, is going to raise everyone's eyebrows. You're going to sit there and wonder, with someone with his medical history, is this a concern? I texted his performance coach, Josh Gregory, who said he's, quote, 100% fine. He just needed a rest. And when you look at the schedule, it makes sense. I don't know why he was playing here other than he lives here, based on the idea that he played the Masters, he played Hilton Head, he played last week in New Orleans. If he would have played this week, of course he's going to play next week. Wells Fargo is a signature event. So now you've got five straight with more than likely going into the PGA Championship. That's not a recipe for success. I don't care if you have a rebuilt back or not. It's just not good scheduling. So I think more than anything, I think he just sort of realized, I don't want to put my body through this, but hey, you still want to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, when he posted on Instagram that he had a flare-up, I think that raises – a lot of eyebrows for a player who has been dealing almost nonstop with these issues for the past 2 years. And he had made such great progress. And in talking to him at Riviera, talking to him again at TPC Sawgrass, and then again just a couple of weeks ago at Augusta National, I think Will Zalatoris was even surprising himself with the recovery that he has enjoyed since he returned to the PGA Tour in 2024. He said every time that he thinks he's 100% Rex, he just feels even better the next day. I don't think it's any surprise we look at his performance this year that it has been inconsistent, because he is now dealing with a new body. He is now dealing with a little bit of a new swing, which has made some compensations to take some of the strain off his back. I think he's currently learning what his limitations are going to be. He has still popped up and played good golf a handful of times this year, and then he's also played some pretty dismal golf as well. I think long term, this was obviously the right move. I'll be very curious to see, however, if he plays next week at the Wells Fargo Championship, or if he saves himself and just sort of fine tunes for the PGA Championship, where we know he has proven himself as a big game hunter in major course. Championships.
Well, and you're right. Next week, it will be a good litmus test. If for whatever reason he decides not to play next week, then maybe you and I have a much different conversation on Wednesday going into the Wells Fargo Championship. And I will say, talking with Aaron Oberholzer this afternoon, you're right. He had wrist issues. This is something that he knows a lot about. When I asked him specifically, and I'm not going to pretend here and try to break down the swing like Brandon or AO, but he says that, yes, he's done a really good job, Will has, of becoming more rotational. Instead of the reverse C thing where he kind of locks in behind it and kind of has to sort of rock back and make sure that the angle's right. And he said when he's rotational with the new swing, it looks really, really good, and clearly he's taking pressure off his back. This is a direct result of everything that he's gone through, and he's heading in the right direction. He said, but when he gets under pressure, AO said, he kind of reverts back, which makes sense. It's what we all do with our golf swings. You're going to revert back to what you feel like you're most comfortable with. And in that case, it's the big reverse C. It's rocking back. It's putting all that pressure back on his back. So I think it's going to take a minute for him to figure this out.
This is completely unintentional. Let's be very clear. But I don't think we have any choice, Rex, but to continue this faux medical diagnosis podcast with, of course, Tiger Woods, who is making the rounds, promoting his Sunday Red brand. He was on Jimmy Fallon on Tuesday night. He was on the Today Show on Wednesday, kind of reciting the same stories of the origin story of Sunday Red, why he's doing it, why he wears red, the 15 stripes of the logo. We're not getting into all that. If you want to, go ahead.
No. Explain to me one more time. 15 stripes and Sunday, two words. Is that it?
We still don't have a great explanation on Sunday, sure. Two words. But maybe one can be forthcoming. However, the newsiest bit, which you were sifting through as we listened to his 9-minute Today Show hit with Carson Daly, to me, was that Tiger saying he was, quote, extremely sore after the Masters. No surprise where he finished last and did not look particularly good in doing so among those who made the cut. But he did say, at least right now, he is on track to play the remaining three major championships for the remainder of the year. You were in the Bahamas. He was very optimistic. He said he was going to adhere to this once a month playing cadence. That has already been derailed, of course, in the month of March. Did not play the API and did not play the Players' Championship as well. Said that he didn't feel his game was there. He didn't feel his body was ready to do that as well. Do you believe Tiger when he says he is still on track to play the remaining three majors?
Yeah, I do. He's got a little bit of leeway in here. He had some time off after the Masters just to let his body recover, and we know that's going to take a minute. And speaking with people inside the camp, as bad as that last place finished at the Masters looked from the outside, and I'm with you, it didn't look great. Internally, I think they celebrated it as a bit of a victory, moral or otherwise, because he made it 72 holes. And we talked a lot about the idea that
Tiger
Friday,
Woods is not in the silver linings business.
No, he's not. But if he's looking at it from the big picture standpoint, and I'm kind of told when it comes to this, he is starting to do that, that 23 holes on Friday, woke up, it was in the 50s, like everything was going against him on that golf course, the most demanding golf course, walk in all of golf. Everything was going against him, and he was able to pull it off and make the cut. So I think that was a good first step. I think the bigger question will be, going forward, can he practice at all? We just had this conversation about Jordan Spieth. We just had this conversation about Jason Day. You can have the best intentions. You can have the best focus in the world, but if you can't put the time in, and certainly Tiger Woods has done it better than anyone, certainly since I've covered the game, I just don't know how he makes that next step. There's a lot of talent still in there. I don't think he loses the talent, but he's lost so much of his physical ability. I don't know how you get it back if you can't put the reps in.
Rex, Tiger Woods called it, quote, a good week all around at the 2024 Masters. He finished 27 shots behind Scottie Scheffler. That can't be made up with a couple weeks worth of practice in his backyard at Jupiter. It can't be made up with 36-hole marathon sessions at Medalist. Like, there is so much competitive rust that needs to be chipped away, or so much competitive iron that needs to be sharpened, whatever cliche you want to use. Like, there is...
Keep going. You have more.
There is not a gap, but there is a gulf between Tiger Woods and now the best players in the world. And he has these two, I think, competing factors. Yes, can he get his body to the starting line? Can he feel good enough to go through the prep, play nine holes each day on site at Valhalla? Can he get through the foundational aspect of just walking 72 holes in competition? That is one issue. And not even a mention of the rest recovery that he needs after each and every round. I think an even bigger obstacle is, how does he get his game there? How can he possibly get his game sharp enough to compete against the Scotties and the Rorys and the Brookses, who you know are going to be in tip-top form for major championship because their bodies are not 48 and surgically repaired? I mean, it's just such a tall order. I'm still skeptical that we will see Tiger. In other words, long story short, I'm still skeptical we'll see him for the remaining three majors.
No, I think he'll play the remaining three majors. I'm not going to be surprised if he makes the cut in one or two or three of the remaining majors. To your point, no, I don't think he's going to be particularly competitive. To be fair to Tiger Woods, there is a gap between Scottie Scheffler and everyone else right now. So it's not 27 strokes, which is the number that he lost at the Masters, but there's a pretty big gap right there, just period. I don't know how he competes with the guy who finishes fifth, though, because I don't know that he can put the reps in. I don't know if he has the shots anymore. Tell me the last time Tiger Woods hit a shot and you thought to yourself, huh, I don't know that anyone else on tour can do that. Like, we've seen him do cool things. We've seen him pull off really, really cool shots, but it's been a minute. I don't know that I could sit here and give you the time frame of the last time I saw him on a golf course hitting consecutive shots. You followed him in L.A. Was there anything about his play there that you were, other than when he almost beamed you in the head, that made you think, yes, this could be it if he can pull those shots off?
Yeah, that was a very un-Tiger-like shot when I nearly got brained with his shank on the 18th hole at Riviera. I think it's very interesting, Rex, because what does Tiger have left to prove at this point? At some point, it doesn't diminish his legacy, but it certainly could be a sad way to go out if he's given all he's got and he's finishing T45 at the Masters, or he makes the cut at the PGA, but he has to withdraw because there's soreness. At what point do you think we'll reach diminishing returns, where you can admire the grit, you could admire the persistence, but at some point it's essentially like a Hall of Fame baseball player who is batting, you know, 212 in his final season in the majors. At what point does it get there? Have we reached that point?
I was about to say, are you sure we're not there already?
Like, I mean, we're getting close. We got a big enough sample size over the past 2 months that the Hogan-esque schedule of playing just major championships is harder than he thought it was going to be.
Well, that, and I just think what he tries to do with the golf swing is going to be too hard on what his body is right now. The pain is gone thanks to the surgery, but it's going to keep going up the kinetic chain, so we can continue to have that conversation. I don't know how long he's going to want to be the ceremonial golfer, and that's essentially what he is. He would never admit it. He'd never stand on the first tee with Jack and do the ceremonial tee shot, at least not now. However, this is kind of what he is going forward. I would be truly surprised. And look, I promised myself I was getting out of the Tiger Woods doubting business a long time ago. But based on what we've seen over not just the last few months, the last few years, I just don't see anything there that would suggest, yep, he's ready to compete again. He's ready to do this against the best players in the world who are younger, stronger, faster, bigger than he is. It's not only that if you put him in a time machine and let him compete against the folks back in 1999, then yeah, maybe he's got a chance at that point. But the players are just better right now, and they continue to get better. That's not a knock on the previous generation. I think every sport takes a step forward, whatever that might be, that either it's technology or if they've just learned how to use the gym better, or they train better, or function as far as instruction goes. All of those things factor into this. No, there's nothing that leads me to believe that at some point he's going to break through. That said, I don't see in any of his answers or any of his non-answers him being willing to suggest that maybe the end is closer than we want to think.
Everyone always cites the 2019 Masters as kind of a similar lightning in a bottle type moment. Yes, I think there was a lot of circumstances that aided Tiger Woods that week. You know, some of the recovery shots where he had clear openings. I think the split tees and going off early on Sunday was beneficial because he could play and stare Frankie Molinari right in the eyes. We could get into all of that, but it was not lightning in the bottle that year in the sense that it came out of nowhere. The Masters that year was Tiger's seventh start of the year. He had trended going in there. He was just coming off a pretty encouraging performance at the match play where he beat Roy McIlroy. Like, you could see, maybe not a major championship victory, but major championship contention would not have been out of the realm of possibilities. To think that came out of nowhere, I think, was an inaccurate narrative. This would be entirely different, where he has not really shown any sort of glimpses. It's not like he's, you know, sniffed contention or been in the mix for a title with 54 holes to go. This would be completely out of nowhere if he were to get there.
Well, and I've had this conversation with older players who sort of played in that era. And the comparison always is to Jack in 1986 at the Masters. And everyone who was familiar, who was there, not those of us on the outside that really weren't quite paying attention the way we do now, they will tell you back in the day, I remember having this conversation with Davis Love, saying that Jack by far was out of the blue because Jack had not done anything in years, much like Tiger Woods has not done anything in years up to this point. When Tiger won the 19 Masters, just go back to Eastlake the year before. Like, there were things in his most recent past that you could point to and say, yes, he could definitely still be competitive. There was no reason to think Jack was going to be competitive, even at 46 years old, and it's a little bit different time frame because 46 was a lot older back in 86 than it is right now. But yeah, I just don't see anything there. I want to be more as optimistic as anyone when it comes to Tiger Woods, but you can't point to a stat. You can't point to a swing. If Brandel Chamblee was on this podcast, he would struggle to break down the recent swing and try to explain why it might work at Valhalla or why it might work at Royal Troon or why it might work at Pinehurst.
I think that concludes the Tiger Woods major championship prospects segment, since we probably will not do so in a couple weeks' time at the PGA Championship, because I don't think he will factor into the ultimate outcome. This was the most medical heavy podcast. Before we get out of here, Rex, is there anyone else in the field who is dealing with any sort of medical condition that you would like to highlight or spotlight on this podcast that we can include?
Absolutely. I tore my meniscus 6 weeks ago. I believe we've talked about this, playing pickleball. That's a lie. I've already admitted
you weren't
this
playing one. Pickleball.
I was not. I was picking up a loose ball that came onto our court from some other court and twisted it. And it still hurts.
You really shouldn't share that story publicly.
I'm playing hurt. We had fun today, and the sound was down, so I didn't get the chance to see you. I tracked down an armchair meteorologist. And that's what you like to fancy yourself as. Like, if you weren't doing this, I know that you want to be a weatherman. It's what you have always talked about. You always get excited. You always want to elbow Burko out when it comes to doing the weather reports on the early live froms. However, I found someone in Ben Griffin, PGA Tour player, who has also worked in the financial industry. Like, this is a Renaissance man, but his minor was meteorology. And I had him do the weather report for tomorrow here at TPC Craig Ranch, which is going to be varying shades of awful. I didn't get a chance to hear your weather report to match him afterwards. How would you grade yourself? And then I'll ask others who are probably a little bit more independent, a little bit more objective.
I didn't give a forecast. I must say, mad props to Ben Griffin for minoring in meteorology, because as I told the story on Golf Today, and I apologize if any of the 17 viewers of that are now listening to this story once again, but I took my senior year spring semester at Georgia. I took an intro to meteorology class, thinking that was just going to be like a cake elective, a fun way to go out, just get me to graduation. Wasn't too worried about it. It was absolutely brutal. The amount of science and physics that were involved in that class. Like, I was hanging on for dear life just to get a C when I was a very good student while at the University of Georgia, despite partaking in other activities. And so I have resigned myself, Rex, to being an amateur storm chaser, where if there's any sort of severe weather warning, I'm outside. I'm looking for rotations. Tornado warnings always get me in a tizzy. Any sort of formation in the Atlantic or the Gulf, tropical storm-wise or hurricane-wise, always piques my interest. I'm looking at the models. I'm looking at the forecasting. I'm trying to get a little bit hot and heavy with that. And Damon made a great point that this is not just a fascination with me. It's a fascination among many Golf Channel talent. Not just
well, Todd Lewis, also minored in Todd meteorology Lewis as well.
Loves meteorology. Steve Burkowski, as I mentioned on the show, has his own monitors and modeling system. You know, you have the American model, you have the Euro model, you have the Burko model. Like everything is, like people just love it. Now, as you mentioned, the forecast is not good for the remainder of the week at the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson. We are scheduled to have the recap podcast, the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lab, on Sunday evening. If we cannot make that, oh, that we're going to have some issues. I'm heading to Pinehurst, North Carolina on early Monday morning for U.S. Open Media Day. Wyndham Clark will be in attendance, the reigning champion, reigning national champion on Tuesday. I'm playing Pinehurst number 10, a media day there. We will, Rex, have the recap podcast at the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. I just hope it doesn't involve you having to stay in Big D until Monday or maybe even Tuesday.
Take it easy with the Tuesday stuff. I don't know why you had to go down that route. Our friend Steve DiMeglio is notorious for that.
I'd love it.
Yeah, let's at least try to tee off of the first round on Thursday before we start talking about Tuesday finishes, if you don't mind. And I would like to request, I'm going to ask you, you're heading home tonight. As I said, got to catch a flight, got to get to LaGuardia. So I'll make this quick. I want to hear what's on the grill because you're home for the first time in a couple of weeks. But I also want to ask, obviously, we're in the Dallas area, Allen, McKinney, whatever that means, to the folks that live here. We're going to Hard Eight Barbecue tonight, which apparently is supposed to be some sort of local institution. If anyone has a better option, please, by all means, comments section on YouTube, yes. Please hit me up. I'd like to hear all of your suggestions because, as you pointed out, I got plenty of free time this week.
YouTube comments. You can find him at Rex Hoggard. GC, there is a very big semifinal T-ball game. By the time this gets posted audio-wise, the result will be known. If my five-year-old loses in that T-ball game, which I hope he does not, I will be smoking ribs on Saturday. If he does, instead, I'll be sweltering in the Florida heat and humidity while watching five-year-olds attempt to run the bases. On Sunday, of course, it's Cinco de Mayo. We have a couple parties to attend there. I believe it's being catered, though, by a Mexican food company. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys know the drill, nbcsports.com/golf for our latest news, notes, and commentary. We don't know how much Rex will file from the CJ Cup Byron Nelson, but fingers crossed that he will double dip and provide all of his enthusiastic reports and insights for you, the website readers. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Hope to talk to you guys on Sunday evening or Tuesday. We'll just have to see.